Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we're consistently inconsistent in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, last Saturday we went to the Vitality and put on a performance that showed no vital signs as we left Bournemouth with nothing. It was also a defeat that cost us more than just points as Jack Hinchelwood limped out of the action after less than a minute with an ankle injury which could keep him out for a while. Fortunately, the injury to Maxim de Kuyper that saw his afternoon cut short appears to be not too bad, which means he could be available as we welcomed Spurs to the Amex this weekend. And then on Tuesday night, we're back in cup action as we travel to Barnsley in the Carabao Cup. In other news this week, there has been a restructure behind the scenes as the highly regarded technical director...
David Weir. You didn't even
David
put Dobby
Weir.
Weir.
I forgot to put his name in.
All right. Hang on. In that case, just start with David Weir.
Okay. In other news this week, we have a restructure behind the scenes as the highly regarded technical director, David Weir, has left the club and he has been replaced as technical director by his assistant, Mike Cave, who will now be reporting to a new sporting director in the name of Jason Ito. Joining me today as we make sense of all of this and more as ever is Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Justin Brentnell. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, Justin. How's it going, mate?
Hello. All good, thanks. All good, thanks. Bit of an average start to the season, but I'm still confident we can achieve.
Well, as I said there in the intro, it's been consistently inconsistent so far.
Don't forget, when we won the fourth division 25 years ago, we lost three of our first four games badly. So,
yeah. Well, it's also this, and the game on Saturday was also the 50th game that Fabian's had in charge. So we'll come back and look at his tenure in a little bit.
Game, but 50th league game.
It's 50th game.
Okay.
In all competitions is that's the stats I've got anyway. It was just a frustrating afternoon on Saturday, wasn't it, Joe? Just
yeah, I think the performance was distinctly average, and then you're looking at fine margins then. So conceding a goal when our left back is trying to get back on the pitch, having been rudely pushed into the advertising hoarding,
manhandled,
and then
splattered.
the second goal. If you give away a goal like that in the Premier League, you are really going to struggle to win a match.
Yeah,
let alone draw.
It was the modern art of shooting yourself in the foot, really. To be honest, I mean, there was.
AD, that was our best shooting. first half, certainly. I mean, it seems to be a pattern at the moment. First half, bit insipid, bit lightweight, bit weak. Like I say, I mean, Bournemouth have a little bit of a habit also of knowing full well that, and I'm going to say this, that Brighton are a technically superior side and therefore like to mix it up, shall I diplomatically say. And there were a few bits and pieces of niggles there that were going on that I thought, the referee really isn't picking up on it. Don't get me wrong. The penalty, of course, it was a correct decision. And in that sense, you know, the referee didn't make a direct impact on the score. But there were parts of that game where, you know, Bournemouth were being a little bit naughty. And again, 20-odd years ago, do you remember that game when Eddie Howe was in charge and it was 1-1 and they had that moody penalty right at the end?
Yeah.
And, you know, making out that Elphick handled it when it was really Steve Fletcher and it was outside the box. And that particular game, they like to batter that, you know, Kasper Ankergren got a kick in the head and things like that. There is something about those, the sides that it's a way of dealing. I mean, you can either do the low block, which at home Bournemouth are not going to do, or they're going to leave the boot in. That shove on de Kuyper was, well, it was a foul for starters. Secondly, I mean, let's put it this way. The law of physics doesn't, you know, unless he's a real drama queen, he's not going to throw himself into the advert hoardings, is he? It means he was shoved badly and the referee completely missed it.
It was terrible. The problem we had with this one, obviously, ultimately, it ended up in a goal. But because, It was too far back in the scheme. I mean, we still had, obviously, we still had 10 players on the pitch. We still had to defend it, and we didn't. I mean, it was a great strike, to be fair,
Well, I think the one part of it we had was that we defended it, but because we didn't have 11 players on the pitch, we didn't have the opportunity to win the ball further up the field, because we had to retreat just that, probably that 10 yards. So there was no out ball. It wasn't a direct thing straight into the goal. There was a couple of small clearances, but there was no one there, and that's the difference between 10 and 11 men in situations like that.
Well,
Yeah, yeah.
if the referee had given the free kick, then the chances are the ball's not going to end up at the other end at that particular moment in time anyway.
Well,
But
exactly.
It looked like Mitoma had gone to left back and was trying to deal with the attack prior to them scoring. You then had Ayari trying to get involved as well, who'd only just been subbed on after Hinchwood had the injury. So it was pretty unlucky circumstances, but all a huge benefit and win for Bournemouth, because by fouling one of our players, they've gained a fantastic advantage for themselves.
to be fair, it was a decent strike, but that is
Was
still missing the point.
No, yeah, it should have been a free kick in the lead up to it,
Yeah, I mean, don't get me
but
wrong,
VAR
we'd have
won't go
taken.
back that far in the build up because it's like
Well, that's the point. It just went out. He just signaled a goal kick. Because yeah, even the TV commentary picked up on it, and you think, well, hang on, for a game of Bournemouth against Brighton, where they're not really analysing it to the nth degree, even the co-commentator was saying, how on earth has the referee missed that? It's a clear shove, and like I say, De Kuyper, unless he's an acrobat or a stuntman in a previous life, is not going to throw himself into the advert. I mean, he managed to put his shoulder into place, but was it someone said that he is the side of his knee clattered into it first, or took the force of it?
It was a bad one, and obviously it ended his afternoon as well. Fortunately, the
Thankfully, with
injury to
not too
him,
much lasting damage.
fortunately the injury to Maxim isn't too bad, and hopefully he should be available for this weekend. But one person who isn't going to be available for this weekend is Jack Kintrewood, who didn't even last a minute in this game, Justin.
Yeah, you look at the replays of his foot going into the turf, and it's one of those where it's almost the side of his foot goes into the turf, and you can see the
It was
whole of
actually
his
Evan
weight.
Nielsen's hand.
Yeah. But yeah, you look at that and you think, oh, that's gonna hurt. And then you think that's done some damage. Really unfortunate for him.
There is something about the Hinchwood family that worries me a little bit. Because I think his grandfather Paul, his late grandfather Paul, great uncle Martin, and his father Adam, I'm pretty certain all three had to finish their careers early due to injury. Certainly, I know Adam did. I think he was 26. Now, obviously, medical technology has come on leaps and bounds since the 70s when Martin and Paul were playing, and since the 90s when Adam was playing, the 2000s, sorry, when Adam was playing. But even so, what was it? Damaged ligaments, is it? Is still damaged ligaments, and there's only so much that, short of cutting his foot off and putting a new one on within the space of 20 minutes, like Robo Hinch, then it's not going to happen. And what worries me is, I'm hope he's built of sterner stuff, and that this isn't the start. Maybe I'm worrying too much. I was probably because I spent most of August in hospital. I'm thinking, I've seen what happens here.
I mean, you could see the disappointment was etched on his face because obviously I mean, well, we joked that he might make the well, it's not really a joke actually, that he might make the squad in the summer for the World Cup. But all the time, he's not playing. He's not going to be in the under 21s either, and he's firmly establishing himself in that side. And
But the word is it's 8 weeks, so he will certainly be back, mid-November. At that rate, that's kind of early to mid-November. So he'll, I think it's, well, it depends on what Thomas Tuchel's after, but I just can't see any Brighton player going to the World Cup for England.
Alan Webster.
Well, yeah, quite. Just because,
Yeah, maybe. Well, I actually watched England play last week, and I actually enjoyed it.
Oh, the Serbia game.
I can't believe what happened to
I
me.
thought they were utterly, utterly brilliant. Now, well, let's talk about that. Take our mind off it. I mean, I know we don't tend to venture into this. Justin, did you see it?
I did see it, and yeah, I was very impressed. I don't know how it's changed, and I probably can't describe why, but there was a big change there. I think Serbia are a pretty good team, and you spoke about Bournemouth not playing the low block. I think they decided to take us on, and potentially they should have been keeping five at the back the whole time. Yeah.
No,
So,
well,
what are you
that's
saying here,
the
Bournemouth?
age-old thing. I mean, we're terrible about playing against a low block anyway. But that's something that Bournemouth didn't actually do, to be fair. I mean, they did mix it up a little bit. They were going long, they were going short, they were aggressive. I didn't. It was one of those games. I don't think it was a dirty game. It was a niggly game, and but there was 8 yellow cards in the game.
And I think probably each one was justified. I mean, yeah, it could be a clean game, but a yellow card offence is a yellow card offence. I mean, sometimes I feel it's weird when you've got a really clean game and the only caution is a red card. You think, well, that person really stands out. But I think it's more indicative of it being competitive. Now, like I say, in the first half we were a bit slow, a bit insipid. I don't think we picked up a booking, oddly enough, in the first half, basically because we just let Bournemouth have the ball. But it got competitive. Certainly, we were a lot better in the second half. We were, like I say, it follows a pattern. I mean, look at the Man City game. A bit insipid in the first half. I know the substitutions; you can't sort of rely on that every single time. And obviously, any given manager's tactical plan has gone out the window when you have two injuries in the first half, in the first half hour. It severely limits what they can do in the second half.
Yeah, and it gives you free opportunity
Exactly,
to
I mean,
but
a
change it.
quadruple substitution ain't happening.
No, but I mean, it was frustrating. But there was one bright spot, I thought, and I wouldn't say I've been down on him per se, but I find him very frustrating, and that's Yankuba Minte.
I know you're going to say that.
But he was anything good we did seemed to involve him at some point. I mean, there was that chance he had in the first half, wasn't it? When Jorginho, with a brilliant ball, put him in, but his touch just let him down, and he ended up taking him away from goal. And then there was an easier save for the keeper if his touch was better. But I
Justin, do
was
you want to
looking.
go first before I start ranting?
Go on then.
I think he's got it all. I think he's got the pace, the skill. He can finish. For him, it's maturity and it's consistency. And AD, that the decision making sometimes is very frustrating. But then you see that cross he put in for Matoma, absolutely brilliant. He knows where Matoma's going to be. And you could tell they've worked on that. You could tell they're building up a good understanding. So, yeah, I thought he was the man of the match.
That was the diplomatic version of what I was going to say.
Oh, what's the undiplomatic?
He drives me around the twist.
It does.
You can
It's
see that
infuriating.
there is so much potential. I'm not going to use the word potential here because, like as Justin said, he's still young. He's still learning the game. He hadn't played for Newcastle before he joined us, and like you say, his decision making, it's a case of do you pass, do you shoot? That particular really good bit of skill that he had against Man City, where he nutmegged one of the players, jinked past another just by the merest drop of the shoulder. That was wonderful. And then, now, admittedly, I think the ball probably got about 6 inches further away from him than he intended. So he was stretching for the shot and it ended up going wide. But in watching that, I was just waiting for the net to bulge. And that is the Yankuba Minte that we know he can be. And I really hope he fulfills that potential. And he has every opportunity and every chance to do so. Let's face it, he is skipping past players. And I think now that Matoma is a known quantity, I think that Minte is actually going to be the next one, as they say, coming off the parking lot, where teams are going to take a little bit of time to work out that actually they need to double up on him as well, or even treble up in a way that
Yeah.
they're terrified of Matoma. Again, having said that, Matoma's decision making can be a bit sort of frustrating as well, but he's a couple of years further down the line. Minte, I've got such high hopes for him. But we just have to be patient. He's not going to turn 23 tomorrow while he's still whatever he is, 19, 20 now.
Yeah. But I mean I've often described him as a modern day Paolo Wanamaker, where he doesn't know what he's going to do himself. So it's very difficult for the other players to know
One for
what
the
he's going
kids
to do.
there.
But it's but I mean, one thing I did pick up on this, and I really don't want to be down on anybody really, but it's been a consistent feature of this season. We're going to talk about Carlos Baleba later, but another player who was also linked to Manchester United in the summer was Danny Welbeck, and it looks like he's actually playing for them already. He's just not quite up to speed. I mean, Bear and I've often described Danny as a Rolls-Royce of a footballer, and I think he's just got this magnificent engine, but I just think he needs a bit of an oil change at the moment. He's
Do
just
you
seems to, I
think he's had
think he's
his head
lumbering.
turned?
No, I don't think he has.
I
No.
can't imagine it because I mean there was, the talk after the transfer window that Man United were putting in an offer for him or they might do in January, which smacks of desperation and I think is actually just sort of like Pringle kettle chips tweeting.
Yeah, but it's. I just don't think his. I think I don't know whether he's had. He's got a knock or he's got something else. But basically, there was the chance against Everton where he was just behind the ball. He didn't time his run properly,
Well, I think that was
and
on. I'm not going to blame him for that one. I think that
no,
was
I
down
mean
to the
that was
cross as
partly. But I
well.
mean, Danny of last season or the season before would have been slightly more mentally attuned to what's going to end. Be slightly ahead of the curve, and again. That chance that Minte had, where his touch slightly let him down. Again, if you look across the line, I mean, it was a great ball from Jorginho to put Minte through. But once he was through, the rest of the midfield should be like busting a gut to get up with him, and he had no option to shoot because there was nobody else in the middle to get to because
Okay,
Danny was too slow.
Justin, one, do you agree? And two, if you do, what is it you think that you see or don't see from Danny Welbeck so far this season?
I think I do agree that there is something there, isn't there? In the pre-season games, I was just a little worried because he wasn't being used as much as I thought he should be, and we were seeing the Jorginho O'Reilly partnership. So there might be something there in terms of niggling injury slash fitness. I think it's also worth bearing in mind that Hertzler from his number nine, it seems to be the movement. And the almost like there's a lot of decoy running and there's coming deep, and he seems to be doing that okay, I guess, but he doesn't seem to be getting a lot of the ball. So that would be my big observation. I don't see him with the ball a lot, and then when he's getting the odd chance, it's just not working out.
Are you
Yeah.
worried? Sorry, are you worried that, obviously the tradition of him being the line leader and therefore supposedly, and I think that this kind of thinking is a little antiquated, that because you're the line leader, you're also therefore supposed to be the leading goal scorer or the main or even the principal goal scorer. Whereas, as you say, he makes decoy runs because let's face it, as much as we scream about, oh, we haven't got a 20 goal a season striker, I don't care about that. I want an 80 goal a season team and I don't care who scores. So with that in mind, are you thinking maybe, Justin, that his role is becoming unfamiliar and he's not happy with it?
Yeah, that could be true. That could be true. And maybe we're going to another phase of what Hertzler's plans and the development in it. So if you look at the last season and you look at our performances against the traditional Big Six, we did amazingly well. We only lost a couple of games out of those 12. It was fantastic. Where we struggled massively was the breaking of the low block. So I think that's obviously been something they've been working on. If you can get your striker to try and move the centre backs or defence about and give other people room, like Mitoma, Minte, Jorginho, Ayari, whoever, I think that's possibly a solution they're looking at. I suppose my point would be I don't see Welbeck touching the ball a lot. I don't really notice him that much in the game because he's
No,
sort of.
because I mean, what we have seen from him, he quite often he drifts wide and like creates space for other midfielders to come
Yeah,
in,
yeah,
and he's very very dangerous coming in off either flank actually. I mean, one of my main concerns is, and I think this is something which we might see a lot of until January as well, is the fact that I don't think our transfer window was particularly clever to a certain degree in the fact that Danny is obviously he's a fantastic player. He's getting but he is getting older, and the only other players we've got that are actually number nines as or as
Nine
he
leaders,
is
yeah.
Simas and Kostoulas, because we've let Evan Ferguson go out on loan, and we've sold João Pedro, so
I
we
think
might.
Ruta can do that job, actually. I mean,
He's not a striker, Al. He's not a striker. He can do the
again,
job.
hang on. You've just actually gone completely against the point I was making, the antiquated thinking. You don't, you can't think of it in terms of he's not a striker. That's not the point. If you know how to lead the line, it's not about striking the ball. It's about knowing how to what your job is when you're the player who's asked to play furthest forward. And I'm thinking that, even Jack Hinshelwood's played this role before. It's not about being a striker. It's about filling in the role and doing the job which you're asked to do. And I think that actually Jorginho Rutter, when he's on his game, can hold the ball up and bring people in and make the decoy runs every bit as good as the likes of Welbeck on his day. So I don't have that worry in that sense, although I do worry that come the day that Rutter and Welbeck get injured, then the lack of experience is going to concern me. And you think, well, who do you stick up as the line leader? But I've got no problem with Rutter. I think the biggest problem is having, well, you sell João Pedro for a nice sort of tidy sum, and you're right, Tsimikas is someone who they're not going to stick out on loan. Because otherwise, we would need to go and buy someone, but who's not going to be ready for a good third of the season. And I think that his cameo, well, is what, 20 minutes was it at Bournemouth, shows that, yeah, he doesn't look out of his depth and the potential is there. But you can also see what Hertzler's on about when he says, I think it's unfair to say not Premier League ready, but if he wants to pull up some trees, then it's going to still take a little bit more time. However, you can see that this is a kiddie who really wants to learn and really get stuck in.
He's got an awful lot of potential, Justin. And as does Kostoulas. But I mean, I don't think we're gonna see an awful lot of them until, well, we'll probably see them on Tuesday night at Barnsley. They're probably, I think one of, because they both came on against Barnsley against Oxford, didn't they? But I think we might see one or both of them start against Barnsley.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is compared to last season, if you take the front three of Welbeck, Jorginho, and Pedro, we are significantly weaker. So we've replaced a what would now be considered a top level Premier League number nine or number 10 with two players with that word again, potential.
Yeah.
But when is that going to be realised? It's a gamble, and perhaps that has led some decision making in terms of the a restructure. Who knows?
Well, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, actually. But it was one nice thing that did come out of the game was obviously a first goal of the season for Carew, and it was he can head the ball in the goal, so that's nice
Well,
to
actually,
see.
he scored several headers for us. He actually scored a winner against Bournemouth a couple of, yeah, not last season, season before, 89th minute.
I've got recency bias. I remember his last
Yeah,
header was like
it was at the Amex and it just went over the line.
50p
Keeper
head.
nearly clawed it out. It was one of those really frustrating games that you have against Bournemouth, and he could clearly see that we think, well, it's only a matter of time before we score, and eventually it was. But like I say, it did so happen to be on the 89th minute. But and also he scored a bullet header, I think, at Oxford, was it? Not Oxford, sorry, Oxford, at Wolves.
He
I
tends to
could
only
be wrong
score
about
really
that.
like spectacular goals against Wolves, so I'm not sure. I can't remember, but
I think
we'll
there was a game we won 3-2 where someone scored a missed a penalty and then we got another one scored a penalty and one of
oh,
those,
the one where Alexis scores and
I
missed the
think
penalty.
so. Yeah, I'm pretty certain. He I have I've, he scored. I mean, what's he got for us? What, 15 goals? I don't know, but I'd say three, four, five maybe are headers.
He's got
Yeah, at
more than, well, he
least.
scored 10 last season alone, so.
Well, there you go. I think this one was probably the closest in.
But we mentioned him a little bit earlier, Justin, and again, another player that may possibly have had his head turned, and actually Fabian's come out and actually admitted as such, and that's Carlos Belaba, who hasn't quite hit the heights of last season yet this season.
It's a very difficult position for the club to be in, nearing the end of the transfer window, and all hell is kicking off on social media with the agitators and the rumours, at the beginning we kind of thought, well, he's getting on with the job, he's being professional, but how does that not affect you? He's probably got his agent calling him every half hour saying, let's do this, stop playing, hang your boots up, look at what Isak's doing at Newcastle, that's what we need to do. You've got other players probably commenting to him in training, and then you start thinking about the history of Man United, the possibility of quadrupling at least your salary, the glory, and then suddenly your mind could wander. But
And again, I mean, we mentioned this on the show before that the stature of Manchester United in Africa is absolutely huge.
but I think that time has passed, and it he needs to get his into the right headspace, I think, and hopefully there with the likes of Milner, Welbeck, those sorts of players in the squad, and obviously the coaching team, he can be refocused. He has never struck me as someone who would have a potential attitude problem or issues. He seems the
No.
opposite, actually.
Oh, he's still been laughing and joking and training and stuff. And
Yeah, yeah.
he's one of those guys. He just loves playing football. It means everything to him. And he just, and he's always better when he's got a smile on his face. And
Yeah,
like, so for to see him, the way he's been playing the last couple of games, where he's shown bits and pieces. He's not been a complete waste of space, totally. But he's like, to see him
that
giving the
clearance at
ball is.
Oxford.
But just to see him giving the ball away so cheaply as he has been, it's just been a little bit frustrating.
Well, I think also what
Yeah.
you've got is you've got such high standards that we're setting in the bar. He set the bar himself very high and very quickly. Even if Man United hadn't come in, do we know that he'd actually have hit the ground running this time around? This, for me, is where a manager earns his corn. For all the fact of people saying, oh, we lost against Bournemouth, Hertzler got it wrong, blah, blah, blah. We win against Man City, Hertzler's a genius, etc. Et it doesn't work that way. That's down to the players. On the pitch, that's down to the players. Yes, the manager does not micromanage. Once they're on the pitch, there's very little he can do. So, but this is where he and his team, you say, if you're saying that he said his head's been turned or he's not concentrating or whatever the phrase that Hertzler used, that's where a good manager, and you can say that in all walks of life and all walks of business. When a member of staff is struggling, that's where you'd like to think that a friend, a manager, or whatever it is, can do the right thing, say the right thing. Now, whether Belieber is one of those who responds to carrot or to stick is another matter. We don't know. We're not part of it. And what goes on behind those doors is none of our business. All we want to see is the result of, and that's where he comes in. And
Yeah.
Hertzler is no dummy that
I
way.
mean, it's
So.
just, I mean, it's just form at the end of the day. I mean, I just want to see the Carlos again that plays with a massive smile on his face. Absolutely takes a game by the scruff of his neck, leads by example, does those galloping runs down the pitch,
And he
and
will.
it and adds. Do you remember that game? I can't remember what game it was. He came on at half time. I
It's
think
Man
it was
City.
against Spurs actually last season. He came on at half time, and he literally raced onto the pitch.
No, it was. I'm certain it was against Man City. He turned the game against Man City
Yeah,
last
could have been Man
season.
City. Yeah, and he just came on, and it just added hunger and attitude and energy to that pitch, and that's the play we want to see.
To the
I mean,
point that Lineker.
it's basically what happened against Man City a couple of weeks ago when those substitutes came on,
Yeah.
and all of a sudden the energy levels were boosted, the energy levels in the crowd were boosted, and that's what we want to see. And I think hopefully we're going to see that player again this weekend.
The difference being is that, in the recent game, Belabor came off. So he was involved in very, very important substitutions, both against Man City, where we turned it
Yeah,
round.
but
One
like I
where he
said,
came on, one where he came off.
but like you said, it's about managing the player, and it's just a case of getting him
But isn't it
back in head
also
straight.
so important and so indicative of how much football is a mental health game as well?
Absolutely. But that said, I mean, that's we're now 4 points from four games.
not worth worrying about right now,
it's not
frankly.
too. But I mean, do you know what our best team is at this moment in time, Justin? Have you got an
No.
idea?
I think it's something along the lines of Verbruggen. I think Van Hecke, although he's pretty dodgy, I thought against Bournemouth has to be there. Don't know about right back, probably Veltman. Dunk, we would probably go on to talk about the conceding the goal, Bournemouth winner. I am really, really looking forward to Boscali making impact on the team. De Kuyper, I think, has to be left back. In midfield, Belabor can't be in the team at the moment, I don't think, because I just don't think he's good enough. That Milner's quite good, but there's a few options. Gomez, Hinshelman might be out. And then
Weaver.
I think that front four has got to be Mitoma, it's got to be Minté, and then Jorginho. And who else is there apart from Welbeck? Tismas isn't ready,
Well,
so.
you can have Weaver playing in that position. You can have what's a Hinshelwood's crock now, isn't he?
Well, that's what we were saying, wasn't it? Because we were talking about the we said we've been saying it for the last few weeks that we would rather see Mats Wiefer in his more customary midfield zone, where he was actually starting to show signs of him being the player that we'd signed. And with the injury to Hinshelwood, maybe, and the fact that Veltman's back in the team, maybe that gives us the opportunity to put him back there and see what he does, because I think he's got the potential to be one of our best
Absolutely,
players.
absolutely. No, I've
Yeah,
got. Oh, go on. Sorry, go on, Justin.
I would just say when normally when we are in possession of the ball and we are in the sort of formation where Lewis Dunk pass it to the opposition, so we're pushing up against a low block basically. Wiefer is playing a defensive midfield, right-sided defensive midfield in that he does tuck in. And it's lopsided, so you then have De Kuyper shooting up the wing. So I can see the logic in it. It goes a bit wrong when there is a fast, skillful winger coming at Wiefer, and I think it's then the job of Minté to almost turn into a right wing back and try and cover that off.
Be
But
fair, there's been times in the
yeah,
last season and a bit where Minté's been our best defender.
yeah,
Um,
but
if you're going to ask me for, sorry, go on.
There's been times where Wiefer's been skinned by wingers
Yeah.
as well.
If you're going to ask me for the best 11, I'm going to say it's whatever the 11 that's on the pitch on 70 minutes.
That's a good answer, Al. That's a very good answer. I was going to ask, does Fabian know what the best 11 is yet? But
Well,
we'll
the
come to
point
that.
is about the if you're talking about a starting 11, I think that's slightly
It's
antiquated.
starters and finishes, isn't it?
It's using the 16 to your best advantage. You have a squad of 18, so use it to the best advantage. It doesn't. I mean, there's no shame in realizing that either your best 11 isn't playing, or realizing that on 70 minutes some players are flagging, or whatever it might be, or you just need to change it up. That's the whole point of whole game management. Is that you change it? I mean, quadruple substitution against Manchester City that people are talking about a lot. That's not an admission that Hertzler got it wrong with his first 11, because they basically played like every single substitution was like for like, and they just needed more energy. Thankfully, we were helped by the fact that Man City stopped playing. But you know, that's the whole point. It's the management of 16 of the 18 players that you have on, or was it is, actually, is it 9 subs or 7? I can completely lose track now.
Nine,
It's
I think.
nine.
Is 9, so it's 20. So 16 of the 20, and using that to your best advantage.
Yeah.
So, I think that the whole thing of what is your best starting 11 is a little bit of a red
Yeah.
herring as a question to ask.
But you know, it's always one of those things, isn't it? Like, we need more energy on the pitch, Justin. Let's put the 40-year-old on.
Yeah.
It's like
Yeah, and it worked.
it did
Absolutely.
work. It did really work. And you know,
Absolutely.
I think if he carries on this as he is at the moment, he'll have broken that record by Christmas. So,
Well, quite.
I'm
Shall we
sure it'll
talk
be good.
about the normally two most reliable players in the team? Dunk and Van Hecke.
Do we have to?
I suppose there's not really much you can say. One, Dunk was careless and didn't look up. Two, Van Hecker was careless. He just got, honestly, even got done. It was just he stuck his leg out because that was a kind of a almost a Pavlovian reaction. And you know, you could see him, and I'm quite pleased on a certain level. I mean, it really is a sort of small mercy how professional he was by the fact he didn't complain. He was bang to
Oh, did
rights.
complain.
No, he didn't. He actually walked away from it. He was bang to rights. He knew what he'd done. I mean, others might have gone up to the ref, but you knew what was what. So,
Yeah, well, we'll sweep that one under the carpet. So
well, I was
it
about to say they are human for crying out loud.
was, but you know what? It was stupid, and it cost us the game because I didn't see Bournemouth scoring, but then I didn't see us scoring either. I think it would have finished
I
1-1.
fully agree. I fully agree. I mean,
It's just, you know, if you look at the other results this week, if you look at the Liverpool game, for instance, where Burnley defended resolutely for like 90-95 minutes, and then just a stupid rush of blood to the head, and they've conceded the penalty.
Right. I mean, what does that tell you about low block then? If Liverpool are going to struggle to break it down with the quality of players they've got, what is,
Yeah.
the complaint that people make about the Albion not being able to break it down? Well,
I
I mean,
mean,
every big team has trouble breaking it down.
yeah. Well, Liverpool they basically haven't played well at all this season yet. But if you look at the amount of money they spent this summer, it takes time to bed all those players in. So when they hit their straps, once everyone's settled and they've worked out what their best formation and lineup is, they're going to fly again, I think. But we're worried about that when we've beaten them later in the season. But first,
Absolutely.
you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, Alan.
Hello.
Have you got any flowers recently?
Yes, I've been to Flowers Unlimited, he said in his fantasy little tale he's about to tell, where I just sort of poodled along Portland Road Hove. That's Portland Road
It's
Hove.
funny because you look like Poodle sometimes when you've got a big beard.
That's Bluto, you wazzock.
No, I'm talking about from the flumps.
Justin, do you know what he's on about?
Yeah, I do. I used to love the film.
What? There's a character out there called Poodle.
Yeah.
Shows. I guess that probably shows how much older that I am than you. Sorry, what was I? Yes, Portland
It's
Road
from the
Hove.
70s, Al. It's right in your.
Flumps wasn't.
The flumps was.
I didn't like it. They all looked a bit weird to me. They just look like hairy Maltesers. Sorry, can we get back to our sponsor,
Back
Dave
to
Costa of
yes.
Flowers Unlimited, 175 to
They do all
177.
sorts of sweet things. I don't know whether they sell flumps.
No, I hope they sell Maltesers. I suspect they do, but you can also get
They
all
do
sorts of.
chocolates, lots of
Can I do
chocolates.
my ident here, please, AD? Dave will be very cheesed off with you, and you might have to go and buy some flowers. All right. Did you buy some flowers for your better half, by the way?
Yes, I
No.
did.
Oh, okay, good lad. 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, which is where you'll find Dave Costa's Flowers Unlimited, a lovely chap who's good enough to sponsor our show. You can buy your flowers, all sorts of gifts, champagne, chocolates, and all those things for your loved ones. Or maybe if you're feeling that fruity, someone else's loved one. So get yourself down there. Do head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, where in an uninterrupted manner, I can tell you that Flowers Unlimited are there. AD, over to you.
Oh, it's good. I feel like we need a refresh after that, and that's exactly what the club have done. And
That was terrible.
well, you know, I'm here all week. It was a bit of a shock to get the news this week, Justin, that David Weir has left the building. Lovely guy. I've met him a few times, and I thought he was doing a really good job, but it apparently. Apparently not.
I do recall some rumours potentially 6 months ago or so where it seemed that Everton were pushing very, very hard to poach him. And so I was pretty pleased he'd stayed. Yeah, they had a lot of good things about him. So yeah, I was shocked. But then, as I said earlier, has our transfer window gone as well as we wanted? And is that the price we have to pay?
Well, I mean, he's been at the club 8 years, and you know he started as a loans manager, which is the job that Gordon Greer's got now, and when Everything when Chelsea started to come and poach everybody, he was moved along, and apparently he'd only just completed a degree in sporting directorship, and maybe it came a little bit too early for him is what
I think probably a really good article to read on this as to the how, when, and
Andy's.
why is Andy Naylor in the on
Yeah.
the in the Athletic. Now, what seemed to happen obviously is we had Dan Ashworth, and let's face it, how much gardening has he done compared to being a sporting director in the last 5 years? Dan Ashworth was obviously the technical director at the club, and David Weir was, as you say, promoted from loans director to basically assist Dan Ashworth, I think possibly with a view to stepping up eventually. But that was going to be a sort of a long-term view. Now, obviously, what happened then was Newcastle came a rat-a-tat-a-tatting on the door. And it all happened a little bit too quickly for the Albion's liking. In as much as it that yeah they were making plans for this to happen, but you know it was probably 2, 3, 4 years ahead of what they ideally wanted to do. So David was promoted to technical director, but knowing full well, and this is I think that the point here that he himself has alluded to, that David himself has alluded to, is that there were gaps in his knowledge. Now, obviously, he's done a very, very good job, and I've heard many people at the club speak so highly of him.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
and especially the way he stepped into Dan Ashworth's shoes, in a different manner. Obviously, Dan Ashworth was very, very high profile because he'd been at the FA. And I think that I think again I saw it that there had been rumblings, or certainly during the summer. I don't think that the transfer window was the reason for it. What it
No.
was that they wanted to get past the transfer window in order that
Yeah.
it didn't cause any other disruption. So once the transfer window was done, then the club made their move. Now, what the change of direction actually is not evidently clear. But I think what it means is that they've got someone who is experienced in doing it, albeit he's only 40, but someone who is experienced in doing what he's doing. But with also the lack of gaps in knowledge that sadly David Weir had.
David, he's basically left on very, very good terms, and basically this just to me it just smacks of the fact that this is how the club is run. It's called not standing still. They've got this the 2030 vision now, which is how does the club progress in the next 5 years? And if you can. As good a job as David was doing, if we've always had this thing where we're looking to not stand still, we're looking to be as progressive a club as we possibly can be, and this is just the next step.
And anyone who's brought in is an improvement on what's gone before. Now, I don't think there's
Yeah.
hardly anyone out there that knows the actual day-to-day role of a technical director of or a sporting director, as the new chap is actually called. Now, no one knows, like I said, no one knows exactly what it is he does. So therefore, it's actually difficult. It's a very sort of loose corporate almost statement the club put out. We're having a change of direction. We're having a refresh. I don't think anyone knows on the ground exactly what that means. I mean, people can guess and they can fill in their own gaps, and they're welcome to do so, and more for them. But with Tony and Paul and their experience of being football administrators, they'll know who it is they're looking for. I think they've had their eye on this chap. Was it Jason Ayto from Arsenal? They've had their eye on him for a while. And let's face it, Tony's hit rate is way, way better than his
Yeah.
miss rate.
And
Yep.
I mean,
Go
I
on, sorry,
looked
go on,
at.
Justin. Sorry, yeah.
I was gonna sort of almost your invitation to say what are they doing? It's about this the filling in the gaps, and his background is scouting. Scout Arsenal, took up the chief scouting role at Arsenal, and then I think he moved up to another position after that. But he is from that scouting background. That is not David Weir's trajectory. That was
No,
not
he's more admin,
his.
isn't he?
Yeah, and if you look at his whole career as a whole, his career, he's the specialist scouting thing there. I mean, he obviously was looking after loan players, but I think this scouting thing to me is sort of is the background is indicating perhaps a direction that there should be improvement or development, and maybe that's where the
Yeah.
club is aiming.
Well, apparently Ito is very data driven. He understands the data analysis, and that's the way it's going. I mean, he was at Arsenal for 10 years. I looked into what some of the Arsenal fans were saying about him, and it's six of one and half a dozen of another, really. Some of them are blaming them for the failures in the January transfer window, going, "Where's our striker?" But I mean, that's just the way it goes. But he was there working under Edu, and he was partly responsible in the change of fortunes from being not competing in the Champions League anymore to challenging for titles.
Yeah.
Well, this is the other thing. I mean, you've just sort of the point you're making there, and like I say, I am so grateful that Brighton and Hove Albion fans have not actually created their own version of AFTV, because that is I don't know how funny they ever intend to make it, but and I don't know if they play up to themselves anymore. But if you're saying that the people on Arsenal social media are saying they're blaming him for this or crediting him for that, it also goes to show that probably like 95% of people who turn up to a football match, they have no idea about the administration or the role it takes to be a sporting director. I wouldn't have a first clue. That's not to say that just because I don't, everyone else doesn't. But I mean, I'd love for people to write down, right, tell us the day-to-day roles that Tony Bloom expects now of Jason Ayto. Not just the goals, how he goes about doing it. And you'll know full well that hardly anyone else will come up with the right answer.
No, it's just, and he's not just here to, well, he's going to work, well, report to Paul Barber and work closely with the men's and women's head coaches. So with Fabian and Dario Vidicic, and obviously we've got the new women's stadium is going to be announced very soon, I understand.
Does anyone here
And
know anything about that at all?
no.
No.
I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
Maybe I can off air.
Okay. No, that's actually, I mean, whatever happens to the project is
we
very
we
ex
we know we know what Paul Barber told us on air, Al.
Listen, we're not revealing any secrets here, because he actually sort of let he let the cat out of the bag by talking about, oh, you can go to the club shop, and you just said, hang on, I mean, you just told it with, I won't complain about it. Okay, fine. So we know it's going to be in the Falmer area, fine. And I think it's a genuinely exciting thing. And I actually, well, let's put it this way, it's, with all due respect to them, a damn sight easier to get there than it is to get to the Broadfield.
Yes,
I mean,
and particularly with the investment they've put into the women's side this season as well, and last season, they want to push on, and they want both the men's and the women's teams to be competing at the top level, and top four for the women's team, top 10 for the men's team, and be challenging for European football on both fronts.
absolutely. I mean, you've been watching the women so far this season, AD. I mean, what have you noticed? I mean, obviously that they had a massive leap up last season, and got their highest ever finish. Have you noticed any changes, any improvements? I mean, or do you feel that it's still
Hard to
the
say after the first two games, but yeah, they've got a box office striker who started the Euros. That's putting bums on seats. Frank Kirby's still there, and they've signed a lot of very very exciting talent, which at some point that we'll see a lot more of. But yeah.
It's just a shame to say that the first game against Villa was pretty turgid.
Oh,
I think I'm probably being unfair, because I mean, given last season when we played Villa in the home game, and Psyche scored a hat trick, and we expected great things of her. And after that, I think she scored another three goals all season. And like I say, that was that particularly famous weekend, which I might have mentioned once or twice.
yeah. Well, we'll see. Once they get back to Brighton, I think they can really, really kick on, because I think people will go,
And
and I think wherever the stadium is, they will have very, very, not sure whether they'll fill it initially, but if you build it, they will come. That's
well, well, this is
that's what
it.
we said about the Amex, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and that happened. And I'll say, I suppose there is the thing that if you're playing Arsenal or Chelsea, who have the big crowds in the first place, and they're playing at Crawley, it's not so far for them to come, assuming they're locals to that
No.
club. And you think, well, it's a bit further to go to Brighton, but you know. There's a fair whack and went from Brighton up to Manchester City at the last weekend. There was a good sort of 50, 100 Albion fans there and made quite a lot of noise. And, you know, and first half, I thought we were absolutely brilliant. Just lost the momentum in the second half. And yeah, it'll come.
It will come. And obviously, you can watch all the women's games on YouTube pretty much. So
Do we
it'll
have
be.
a timeline on the announcement yet, or is it just sort of when they're ready?
They're just saying imminently. It was
Right.
late. It was end of the summer, beginning of the autumn, I think, was the official
That's
date.
quite a wide timeline, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think if you were to speculate, you would look at the timetable of their partners. Governor's meeting because it's
Of
with a
course,
partner.
yeah. I mean, because there's so many people involved in this project.
Well, I have been looking at a timeline, and that is the first 50 games of Fabian Hürzeler, who completed the he raised his bat for his half century at Bournemouth for the weekend. His record, but they've been comparing it to that of Roberto and obviously of Graham Potter before that, and it's comparable actually. He's
The fewest defeats, isn't it?
So it's 123, drawn 14, lost 13. Roberto won one more game but drew less and lost more. So it was 20. Roberto won 24, drew 9, lost 17. Potter was 113, drew 16, and lost 21. So of his first 50, but that was a building
I
process.
think it's unfair to compare them that way, you know.
And it is, but I
Because
mean,
it's what
you
Potter
can look at
inherited.
the. I mean, I'm looking at it's. Roberto scored 111 goals in the first 50 games. Under Fabian, we scored 93, conceded 72. Roberto conceded 84, so it was more exciting.
Well, I think that shows about the whole Roberto thing, isn't it? It was a lot more kamikaze. Was the so the first his first 50 would have been taking him up to about Christmas, I guess, wouldn't it? In his second season, so about probably up until we played, say, that game against Marseille, roughly. I know, yeah, but that win at home to Marseille is probably about his 50th
There or
game,
thereabouts, I would say, yeah.
right? So, yeah, I mean, obviously the previous season, 22-23, which is probably one of our best ever, certainly in terms of finishing the top division, but also in terms of number of goals. I think there's only about two or three seasons where we didn't we scored more goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty manic, but like I say, also a wee bit kamikaze. I think I don't know if it was in that first 50. We shipped five against Everton, didn't we? You know,
Yeah,
like.
but we've also shipped that seven against Forest,
Well,
so
yeah, I mean, these are the things to spoil the stats, aren't
So I mean, Justin, how are you feeling after 50 games under the current gaffer?
I think it's fine. I think he lacks a bit of experience, and I think he's learning lessons on the job. But overall, I'm not worried. I think he'll get better and better and better. Like some of our players. There's potential there. So I'm happy. He does exceptionally well when we play the better teams, and frustratingly not so well when we play the not so glamorous sides.
But that's just been the lot of any manager who of the Albion since the year dot. We've always struggled against a rubbish team.
I think it's just a bit of a statistical anomaly. That's all. I mean, let's face it, what we're talking about here is the home games. Because I always say this, last season we didn't lose against any of the bottom seven throughout the season. It's just that, as Justin quite rightly says, our record against them, and let's face it, if we rewind 6 or 7 years to our first, second, third seasons in the Premier League, to actually get the number, I think it was 21 points we got last season against the big six. To actually think we were ever going to get that by maybe year 8, year 9, people again would have think you're a bit doolally. We lost to Chelsea through some sort of kamikaze defending. We lost to Liverpool because it's Liverpool. But after that, we were superb. We nearly did the double over United and City. And let's face it, United. Or I don't think there's a team now. Now that we haven't exactly got Man City's number, but now that we know we can beat them, we don't have to fear them. I don't think there's any team left in the league. That doesn't mean to say we can automatically beat them. We've always got to be on our game, looking at Bournemouth away. But if we are, then I don't think there's a team that we need to fear. That's
Burnley.
not, yeah, and sorry,
Burnley.
Burnley at home. Yeah, I know that'll be fun, won't it? Oh, that's a game just to stay in the terrace all afternoon, I think.
Apparently, Romelu Vancelo is coming out of retirement just for that one. But
Yeah,
and Ashley Barnes.
Ashley Barnes and whoever
That
the referee was.
was Eddie Howe as well. Blooming hell.
Yeah, I know
Jesus.
exactly. No, it's yeah, Fabian Hertzler, he's a work in progress. I mean, this whole thing of someone on social media saying, because we lost at Bournemouth, it's time for Hertzler. Sorry, all right, we haven't come out the traps flying. Whoop-de-doo. We're 4 games into a 38-game season. And the number of times you see, like that after we lost to Forest, and I think before that we weren't on a particularly good form. Oh, I can't see where our next win's coming from. And then we get 6 in a row. That's football. That's
Well,
the way it
that
goes.
was something I was actually going to say, Justin, because I mean, under Fabian, he's been a very streaky manager in terms of the wins have all come in streaks and the defeats will tend to come in streaks. So this like I said at the top of the show, we've been consistently inconsistent this season. We haven't really done an awful lot. I mean, that game against Man City, that turnaround coming out of there with the 3 points, the buzz around the stadium and around the city afterwards, it was up to the international break, just came at the wrong time. Because I think if we get to carry that momentum into into the game against Bournemouth, if it comes sooner, I think we might have seen a much better result.
I agree. We've had some bad luck. It hasn't been great. What I think we need to do is be in or around the top eight, sort of at the turn of the year, and that's where you have to kick on. Last year, when it got to about end of October, November, December, we started. I think Welbeck was injured, and we really started struggling. If we do that again, we're in trouble. But if turn of the year we're round about the top eight, I think we've got the potential to really push on then. And you might find players like Minté are a lot more consistent. You might find suddenly Tismas and Kostoulas are up to Premier League level and are doing a lot of good things. It's putting your foot on the gas, like
It's being
Man City
consistent,
used
isn't
to
it,
do.
Justin? It's being consistent, isn't it? You know those players can do it.
I mean, football's all about momentum at the end of the day, isn't it? I mean,
No,
it
it's about
just.
goals, mate.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it's like if you've got the momentum to if you win a game, you can take that into the next game. Then it's all good. It's all good. But I mean, that is all we've got time for. So hopefully, when we come back next week, we're going to be talking about two victories. One for firstly a progression in the League Cup, and obviously beating Spurs, who we beat twice last year.
I
But in the
do love, sorry,
meantime,
AD, before you sign off, mate, I do love the way you completely and utterly jinxed. If we lose those, I'm blaming you and you alone.
well,
It's
it's all me. It's all my
all
fault.
you.
But but that is all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye.